sports. Sports, sports. Sports news. Sports stories. And if there's time, even sports opinions. It's the Sports Dump with Will Penhalley.
That's right. It is the Sports Dump. We may change that title. I am Joe Canale. I am joined, as usually, I'll say always up to this point, we've been pretty consistent, by Ephraim Salaam. I'm thinking of changing the name of the show to the Sports Dump Podcast with Canale and Salaam. But there's a number of, only alphabetically, and because it kind of sounds like a deli.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of billing, I understand on a sports show, you deserve higher billing. But just for the sound of it, Canale and Salaam's got kind of a deli type
sound to me. I think it should be
Salami and Canale. See, if you were Ephraim Salami and I was
Salami
Joe Canale,
and Cannoli.
I mean, we could start an Italian deli, and
right.
I don't know how well it would do actually, but the name is there. It's a working title.
Two guys, one cup.
Oh, jeez. We'd get more views, sadly. That's the only way we would make money on this thing. So we're not at that point yet, though. We still have legitimate aspirations. And speaking of these aspirations, in the sports world, it's playoff time in the NHL and the NBA. So baseball's a little, beginning of the season. Football, we're kind of waiting for the draft and all the bullshit that precedes that. But the NBA is happening, and what everyone seems to think is, there are two seasons right now. There's the NBA postseason.
Right.
And then there's the post-postseason, which most teams are thinking about right now because they're out of the playoffs, the draft. And in just a few days, there's going to be, eight more teams that are sitting on the sidelines.
Yes.
So they're thinking about next year. And the Spurs look to be one of those teams that will be sitting on the sidelines. But who knows? They haven't lost at home yet, but it's Golden State and they don't have Kawhi Leonard.
They don't have enough.
They don't have
they
enough.
They really don't have enough. They're well coached, and they will fight. They will be into the game. They'll fight. But in order for the San Antonio way to work and reap the benefits of a great coaching and system is you need one great player.
Nobody's winning a title in the NBA without a superstar
you
anymore.
You got to have a superstar.
The Pistons with Billups were the last team, and they had a lot of very good players. They got Rasheed Wallace, who talent-wise is up there with anybody, and a little bit ahead of his time, kind of a Karl Anthony Towns type inside-outside guy before that was popular. Also a guy that, anybody who played at Portland in the late 90s, early aughts was a bit of I bet they smoked so much weed on that team. I was going to say, like all the dudes on that team.
You can just look at their lips. We call it in the community weed lips.
What?
You can always tell. Weed
Whoa.
Lips.
Whoa. Whoa. What?
Yes. You've never heard the term weed
no.
lips?
No. And right. listen, if anyone would have them, I mean, maybe I lack the.
No, what you would smoke if you did.
Right. If I did, allegedly.
Right, allegedly. Or hypothetically, what would you smoke out of?
Oh, probably a bong or a glass pipe or something.
And that's why you don't have weed
lips. I ain't smoking
lips.
Blunts.
You're not smoking blunts.
I can't talk blunts, yeah. I do not like blunts, I got to tell
you. Give you weed lips.
Got it.
It is what it is. And that's why you don't see it, that much outside of the urban community.
I never expected this news to fall on me at this time today.
I'm all about enlightening.
That was very enlightening.
That's what I'm here for.
And as we wrap that part of the conversation up, it's the 420 mark in the podcast. So that really fits very perfectly right there.
Smoke them if you got them.
So, wow. Weed lips.
Yeah.
And he plays in Sacramento now. He played at Michigan State. Played in Memphis.
Zach Randolph.
There you go. Yeah. He's been busted with a bunch of weed before.
Weed lips.
I mean, the NBA is known to they still you can
oh,
still
smoke.
Fail a drug test though, easier than in baseball.
Yeah, but they don't.
No,
you know when you get tested
right.
in the
They're
NBA.
Telling you. Well, like the NFL, they only test for 3 months.
Well,
right? Correct? No.
No, they only test you one time for street drugs.
Got it.
And that's the beginning of training camp.
Got it.
Now, they can randomly test you forever, as long as you're in the NFL,
right,
for performance-enhancing drugs.
Got it. So those tests happen all the time, but the recreational...
Yeah, like right now, they could call and be like, hey, if I was still in the league, they can call me and be like, hey, tomorrow morning, somebody will be at your front door. There needs
to
be a private bathroom that you got.
It'd
be
and like they watch you.
And it'll be like... I don't know if you've ever taken a drug test.
Only recreationally for a game show.
But when I first got into the league, the guy would, you know, you come in, there'd be a note in your office, you go to the train, there'd be a guy in there, he'd hand you a cup, you go to the bathroom, and you pee, and you bring the cup back to him, and that was it. So, who was it who got caught with the...
The Wizard?
Wizinator.
The Wizinator?
Was it Dante Stallworth? Nope.
No, nope. Maybe. Nope. On the Browns?
I can't remember. And he was on the Vikings. I can't remember his name. But he got caught with a fake penis loaded with urine.
Yep.
So they were like, oh, okay, well, this has to change. The drug policy has to change to a much intrusive method.
The Wizinator is what it was called.
It was
I remember that, and sales went through the roof when
the Wizinator.
That's the best advertising, getting busted for it.
And so now you would come in. It was one bathroom only used. Each team had to have one bathroom only used
for
drug testing. No one else could use it at any other time.
Wow.
And you would go in, and the gentleman would go in with you, and he'll give you a cup. First of all, he'll make you wash your hands front and back. He'll make you have to have your shirt off.
Okay, so nothing running down your...
Shirt off, and you have to pull your pants and your underwear down to your ankles. So you're literally transformed into a four-year-old standing at the urinal and at the ballpark or something like that, which is all fine. What's not fine, and I'm a bit of a shy peer myself.
Yes.
You know, I don't... I can't stand next to someone... at a public urinal and use the bathroom. I can't do it.
I'm
going to
guess most people don't know whether or not they're shy in that circumstance because they haven't been in it.
Well, if you can go to the bathroom, I can't stand next to somebody at the urinal. Like, for some reason, it's not my deal.
No, it's very few people's deal.
Some guys look
it's
forward
my
to
deal.
It.
Well, yeah,
I'm a urinal guy.
Right.
Come on in, right next to me, buddy.
Too bad, because you're 6'8".
I know,
you
right?
Know?
And so... What would happen was you standing there pretty much butt naked. You have the cup in one hand, and the man is standing next to you, not behind you, not out of sight, literally staring at your penis in your hand.
That's his job.
And he's not moving. He's not looking away. He's just staring at you use the bathroom. And then the thing that really gets me is when they want to have a conversation with you. So,
it's like the dentist or dental hygienist, but in a much worse situation.
Yeah, how you guys looking this week? Yeah. You going to get the big win? And I'm just like, hey, look, man, I can't. I would have to turn water on and then close my eye because I couldn't use the bathroom.
Sure.
With him in my peripheral vision. Like, I couldn't do it. Like, I can see a man's face staring at my penis.
Yes.
Nothing's going to come out.
No.
Yeah.
And that's that guy's job every day.
That's what he does.
Yeah. Hey, look,
he's
job.
He's a cock watcher.
He is.
Yeah.
For a reason. So, he's kind of like, he's like the guards in front of the palace in England, the beef eater.
Yeah, the beef eater.
The beef
eater.
The beef watcher.
He's the beef watcher.
The beef watcher. You know, I also, I'm a shy peer, and a couple of factors. We off air, we talked about my Ritalin that I take sometimes for my ADD type symptoms. That has a tendency to kind of slow up the pee process. Combined with being shy to pee, after the recent Star Wars movie, which was very long, I really had to go. But I had taken, a Ritalin, and so that was slowed up. Plus, I'm getting to my prostate's probably, the biggest organ in my body now. Honest to God, I walked in after the movie, and, I got to, the last open urinal. as everyone's coming out of the movie.
Right.
So you know how the bathroom kind of fills up? Mm-hmm. Well, I was there at that urinal until the bathroom was empty. Like 4 minutes. And it
was. I feel your pain.
But I started peeing about 30 seconds in. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, this is such a great topic. But then it was like, 3 minutes of the slowest, what could still be considered a stream. I mean, it was getting there at times. I was like embarrassed. People were like coming in, going into the stall, washing their hands
always,
and leaving.
Always go to the stall.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, I'll wait.
You'll wait for a stall.
I'll wait. Or just go to another bathroom. Like, I'll wait so I can be in there and not be pressured to.
Sure.
And I kept thinking, like, is he. Someone's looking at me like, why is he taking so long? And I just go into the stall.
Yeah.
Have my the problem with being 6'8" in any bathroom.
Yeah.
Is
planes.
You can just see,
see
me.
You.
So if sometimes I just hunch down.
Right.
A little bit.
Right. Because so you don't want to necessarily sit to pee in a
yeah,
in
no,
a
I
bathroom
would not
at a
sit to
right.
pee anywhere.
Okay.
I'm all man here, buddy.
All right. There's a couple bathrooms I would have considered it that are really nice bathrooms where it's like, I should just sit to sit.
Is this marble?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to sit down here.
Yeah.
But there is some good at the new Century City Mall.
Okay. This is important conversation.
The bathrooms there are really nice, especially the stalls, because they're the doors are all the way. You have your own, you know,
yes,
room.
Yes, closed
you
stalls.
You go in your room.
O'Hare Airport has pretty good stalls for an airport in their bathrooms.
Is it one of those airports where the guys got caught doing the foot tap thing?
Maybe. Although in O'Hare, I think most of the stall doors are pretty low.
Yeah.
Like real, like go down to the bottom. Airport bathrooms, I kind of judge the bathroom. Like Paris, the bathroom there, now that's the international terminal, but that was like... That was a bathroom I would sit to pee in just
to
be
in.
Well,
yeah, you can live in.
Right.
In that, you can live in the airport.
You could. Like that the movie. LAX, bad toilets. Yeah, not as bad as LaGuardia or Kennedy.
You have to go to the lounges.
Well, I don't have lounge privileges.
Well, we all had choices.
Yes. Your choices were different than mine.
Should have tried harder in high school, Joe.
I should have just tried to make those outside shots. I would have been ahead of my time.
You had time.
I did. What was I doing? I was driving up Wheeler Hill Road with my lights off on my car like an idiot at night. Could have been killed. Oh, here's another bathroom tip. And I've got this from doing, you know, lots of corporate shows. All metropolitan areas, hotel bathrooms are the best. And it's like the second or third floor where all the meeting rooms are.
Yes.
You just walk into a hotel like you belong there. And you know, that's
I've done it multiple times.
Many times.
Many times.
New York, it's great because they're just, you know, there's hotels everywhere. And you know, you're walking a lot in New York. So that and they won't let you in some other places.
Right. But you could bring home bed bugs from New York.
That's true.
Restroom, so
that's
be
true.
Careful of that.
You were saying earlier, and you know, we somehow slide into this type of conversation every time. So I'll just make the comment, and we don't necessarily have. But you were like, what's tough being a 6'8" guy. But I was thinking about the Starbucks and the bathroom. It's just tough being a black guy.
It's kind of hard on us right now.
Not right now.
You mean I can't
all
get
the
code to the bathroom?
I was looking on Twitter. This was an argument I think about women's rights act. Actually, that was going on. And I think the argument that the person made was, you know, this is the best time ever to be gay or black or a woman or whatever in the United States.
Right.
But that's like saying, you're just saying, hey, at least you're not a slave. Like, that's
right,
that is the argument of, like, it's the best time ever to be this in this country.
Right.
Because you're not sold anymore. You're not property.
You still don't have
argument.
All the rights that everyone else does, but...
Right. But speaking of rights, if I can transition.
Transition.
So this Kawhi thing, which we kind of started on, and then we went off into both drug testing and bathrooms, which is great conversations, actually. Better than most sports stuff out there right now. But so Kawhi, it's interesting in that he has a guaranteed contract this year and next.
Right.
He's eligible to sign the big, big, big contract after this season. But it seems like the only team that can do that is San Antonio, and right now it doesn't seem very friendly. So do you have any insight into this rift or any thoughts on what might be causing it, because it's been a whole year and this doesn't seem like an injury. I don't know. I don't know enough about it, and no one seems to. What do you know?
To me, it seems like the two, San Antonio and Kawhi Leonard, at first it seemed like a perfect fit because Kawhi Leonard never talks.
Yes.
Tim Duncan was a type of star.
Yes.
That never talks. So it was
stoic,
like,
good soldier.
You know, the passing of the guard. We have the next great two-way player coming in.
Yep. Very. You're right. Similar personality-wise.
Right. Absolutely. But it's a different generation. All right. And you, when you talk about millennials, it's a fine line. Now, Greg Popovich is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, NBA coach of all time.
Yes. One of the greatest coaches in sports.
Comes from a different era.
Yep.
You look at that team, aside from Murray.
Yep.
And a few younger pieces.
Anderson, who's from UCLA.
But the way they built that team is, right now they're veteran guys. But the pieces that they bring in are pieces no one has ever heard of before, right?
European players.
They'll find a guy. They have a big contingent of European players. They also have guys who have played in different leagues overseas, guys who were in the G League.
Different cultures.
That system is perfect for that because it'll take a good player and put him in the perfect position.
It's a system. More than a lot of places, right?
Now you take a superstar like Kawhi Leonard, who doesn't speak, doesn't do any of that, but his mindset is different. It's completely different. Now, there's obviously some type of rift between teammates that we are just being privy to.
Right.
This could have been happening for a couple years now.
Right.
Maybe the older guys weren't ready for a changing of the guard.
Yeah.
Right? Tony Parker's relegated to the bench now.
Mm-hmm.
Manu Ginobili could be both of our fathers.
Yeah. He looks like
so,
mine.
But he's balling, though.
Yeah.
So it's just a difference of philosophy.
Yeah.
Now, Pop is the type of coach that would lean towards his veteran guys because that's the type of system they built. It's kind of like.
And they know the system, less likely to screw up.
It's kind of like the New England of the NBA, but much more likable.
Like we were talking about last week, the regimented. He's more maybe like an NFL team in that. You do it this way.
Right.
You do it this way.
Right, because it works.
Right.
So you don't come in here and book the system and do it your way.
But a lot of other teams, let's say Miami, when they had those guys, there was not, I'm sure, that level of system and
everything.
Well,
no, of course, because it's just different personalities. Yeah. Those players pretty much, even though Pat Riley had a tight handle on, you know, never allowing a personality to get too big. Because Pat Riley was so respected.
Yeah, at
now,
that point.
Now, with Kawhi Leonard, and everybody keeps talking about his people or his group.
Yes.
The difference.
Not saying his posse, though.
Right. No, can't say posse anymore. Thanks, Phil Jackson. but now, Kawhi is a millennial. So if things don't feel right, millennials are known to shut down.
Yeah.
That's just a characteristic of this generation.
It's true. They don't and because they are not used to interpersonal communication as much,
they're not
so when
used
it comes
to
down
difficulties.
To it. Yes, right.
Right, they're not used to going to play in the G League for 7 years and getting called up and sent back down. Like that's not the type of player Kawhi Leonard when he wasn't highly recruited, but when he got to San Diego State, he was a superstar when he got on campus.
Yeah.
Averaged 15 points a game as a freshman and was a double-double machine.
Yeah.
So his life changed.
Absolutely. Now, he's from Southern California to begin with.
Yeah, he's from the Inland Empire, Riverside area. Yeah.
And now, the thing about that is that area gets recruited.
It does. But you know what? It happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. It's kids all the time. You're like, man, how did this kid not, you know? But it just all depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And if that person at that particular time, you think they fit your system. Yeah.
Chester Pitts,
grocery store worker.
That's right. You found him in a grocery store, and then he was first-round draft pick?
It was second-round draft. He was a second pick in the first round. I mean, the second pick in the second round.
Now, did you get any of his rookie bonus?
I should have, but just the fact that he became a multimillionaire and we become great friends was good enough for me.
There you go. It
was good enough for me.
I guess if
once, yeah, I changed his life yeah. and his whole family's life, but that's, you know, that's
yeah.
fine.
You've introduced him to generational wealth that he probably never would have gotten as a grocery store clerk.
But Chester was he was an engineer major. He was extremely sharp.
Ooh,
he's sharp.
Ooh, I'd like
now,
to talk to him about engineering.
He's a nerd. He was a big. He had the big bifocals with the tape on the side. Like he was a.
Just because you wear glasses doesn't mean you're
a nerd.
He went
to like
a nerd.
Art and science
high school. Really?
They didn't even have any sports.
Yeah.
His crowning achievement in high school was they created Tetris on a calculator.
Like they did their own
Yeah, like
they
I don't even know
Tetris.
What that means.
Right.
Okay? I don't know what that means.
Why didn't you just get Tetris?
They sold it.
My crowning achievement is I fucking bought it for $30. I was playing it that day.
I created a cup.
I bought a cup.
Okay.
What was I going to say about...
So with Kawhi, I just think it's a difference of culture, a difference of opinion.
Yeah.
And instead of... like he came back from the injury and re-hurt it, so yes. that was the trust thing.
Yep.
So
broken
now
there.
So now I have to go get my own opinion. And his guys are telling him, hey, look, it's a $200 million year for you.
Right.
All right. The last thing you want to do is put yourself in a
out
position.
For all of next year.
Right. So and then you have Tony Parker come out and say, my injury was 100 times worse, and I came back. Like it's a disconnect
yes.
in there. So
yes.
Kawhi's not even with the team.
Right.
Right. So. Obviously, he won't be there next year. It'll probably be a sign and trade.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's going to be exciting. Going to be exciting. And it seems like he wants to come to L.A.
That would be
just
nice.
Rumors. Oof. It would be nice for either team.
No.
Clippers?
No.
Lakers?
Yes.
So you're Lakers all the way?
I'm Lakers all the way. It's no.
I went to the Clippers game the other day with my friend.
Why?
And Boban. And we talked Boban into a double-double. His seats are real, like 10 rows behind the Clippers bench.
Mm-hmm.
Friend of mine, can you believe it? He splits him with a bunch of other people. and he does sports dump stuff. Brad Morris, very funny guy. He and I worked at ESPN in Chicago years ago doing these comedy, like, they'd bring us into the station each week. We'd do like 3 2-minute audio sketches. He did all the African-American voices because it was him and I. And he's Jewish, so we were like, well, that's closer than I am, I guess.
Oppression.
But the voices were basically like Isaiah Thomas and...
Who did you do?
Bryant Gumbel. I did like Bill Belichick, Eli Manning. Brad did a pretty good Plaxico Burress, but I don't know if it even sounded like him, but the character voice he gave was good. Anyway, He has these tickets, and he has these shirts that he's been making up, like Feel the Boban. And next year he's going to do Free Boban to get him off the bench, and then Feed Boban to get him the ball,
okay.
And then Fear Boban afterwards when Boban is. And have you seen Boban play?
Yeah, I have.
Now, he clearly is not a guy who can play 25 minutes a game because
no.
he'll fall down. But in a 10-minute stretch.
He'd give you all you want.
He played the whole fourth quarter, I think mainly because we were yelling for him.
Yeah.
And Doc Rivers didn't give a shit anymore.
It was
his
over.
Last game.
Right.
You could see when he hugged DeAndre Jordan when he took him out of the game. It was like
one or both of us are gone.
This
is it for us.
So we were screaming for Boban. And in 13 minutes, 12 and 10.
Strong to quite strong.
Yeah.
Strong to go.
I mean,
strong.
And that's what you I think that's how you use that guy. You put him in like the last 6 minutes of the first half, last 6 minutes, and that's all you got. Because every time he got the ball,
it's just right there.
It was like a little kid.
It was like,
he was almost putting a layup down.
Yeah, I remember Anthony, he held the ball above his head, and Anthony Davis was trying
yes,
to swipe
yes,
it.
Yes, that was a great.
Anthony Davis, 7 feet tall, he could get the ball.
That was amazing. Did I tell you about. Rudy Gobert's dad, you know Rudy Gobert plays for Utah?
Yeah, the Jazz, yeah.
And his dad used to play at Marist College.
The Frenchman.
Yes, Rudy Bougarel. He was, when they had Rick Smits, the Duncan Dutchman, who played for the Pacers for years. So they made the tourney a couple years in. So they were getting some decent players. They got Rudy Bougarel, who had never played basketball, I'm pretty sure, before he stepped foot in America. And maybe I did say this. He missed more dunks than anybody in the world.
No, I've never heard this.
That guy, probably about 50% percentage on dunks. And the ones that he missed, so hard off the back of the rim they'd start a fast break going the other way. Nobody could start a fast break. I mean, he probably could have done a trick shot because he'd come in. You know, he was built exactly like Rudy Gobert with less coordination, I think, and understanding of the game. And he would just like, you know, we loved it because he would only get in basically like at the end of games.
Right.
And he was good for one, just crank off the back of the rim every time. He was great.
Maybe he has small hands and he couldn't palm the ball. So that happens a lot.
Like that's once you possible.
Once you get over the rim. You
need the control to put it down, right?
But you try to do it so hard and so fast because you can't, you'll lose the grip.
Slipping out.
It'll just slip right out and hit the back of the iron.
Same way like a baseball slip out of your hand and kind of go up in the air.
When I was 14 and I first started dunking, that would happen to me. You like how I threw that in there, like the age.
That
and
was
all
really
that.
Smoothly
I'm
done.
I'm just trying to tell a story.
You know, when I was 14 and I was having wet dreams, when I was 14 and I started dunking, okay, that's a good line. Were your hands small?
I just couldn't palm the ball
right
yet. And so I would jump up there. I can get up there, but I would try to go so fast because I knew the ball would slip out of my hand that I would hit
you
the
had
back.
To get,
iron.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I, you know, by that summer, it was like
all over. You could once you can get up above it.
My arm was was placing the ball into the rim.
Well, that's the thing with guys like Dr. J or Kawhi. You can see the way they handle that ball.
Jordan.
Yes.
Huge hands. Rajon Rondo.
Yes. I mean, honestly, that is probably and his long arms and everything.
Yeah. So let's talk about that series. Let's talk about.
All right.
You know, the Pelicans. Right now, up 2-0, upsetting Portland.
Kind of reversing what everyone thinks basketball is all about, which is shooting threes and guard play. Now, not that the guards aren't good on New Orleans.
Oh, they're killing.
Yeah.
But they don't fall in love with the three ball.
Rondo, I bet, hasn't taken more than like 10 this season.
He's just not a shooter.
No.
Like, you have to force him to shoot.
He's old school point guard.
He is old school point guard, and I think that meshes well with that younger group that they have, especially because he brings a sense of having a coach. Like, this is what point guards used to be, right? So you think about Magic, and you think about, you know, Jerry West. You think about John Stockton.
Yep.
You think about all of the Jason Kidd, all of these great,
running
great
the team.
Point guards. They were extensions of the coach, right? The reason Derek Fisher was so good with the Lakers, no, he wasn't overly talented, but he had a huge basketball IQ. He knew the system, and he knew how to place people. So you didn't need Phil Jackson up.
He's the one yelling, keeping everyone
like,
going.
You didn't need that.
Yep.
So, and when I watch Rondo, Alvin Gentry has, you know, the perfect situation in having Rondo, who – has a history of playing out of this world in the playoffs.
Oh, he's
he has
playoff.
An alter ego, playoff Rondo.
Yeah, he's kind of like a Robert Horry in a way, although he doesn't have the titles that Horry does, but his playoff abilities.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. So when you have him on the court, the spacing on the court for the New Orleans Pelicans is tremendous.
Yeah.
Right? And so it causes matchup problems for Portland, right? So they'll spread you out, and they have a bona fide star in Anthony Davis who can hit and make any shot.
From anywhere.
I mean,
and he's so quick.
It's unbelievable, but everybody plays their role. No one is extending themselves, trying to do too much, and it could be four or five times down the court where Anthony Davis doesn't even touch the ball, and they don't miss a beat,
and
I think that's the difference.
And it's also – and it's one of those weird – now, I think Rondo excels in the playoffs because it becomes a bit of a more defensive game generally.
Yes.
So that's his forte. And it's weird with Boogie Cousins going out. You know, it's one of those – you can't say they're better without him, but it takes another ball handler out of there.
Well, they're better without him because
– and he's not a all-the-time defensive player.
Right, but it's just a spacing.
Yeah,
right. So
two
think
big
about
dudes,
that.
You
got 2 7-footers in the middle of the floor. Where's the spacing? There's no spacing.
Yeah.
So you pack everybody in. Those jump shots aren't open anymore.
Right.
Right. It's just too many bodies out there.
Yeah.
With one, with Anthony Davis in there, who can hit the three, even though Boogie can stretch the floor as well. But you got the corners sealed off now. So now the middle of the court is wide open. So now when you're driving the ball and dish it, you got 2 7-footers down there.
Yep.
You're not driving to the basket.
And Rondo can drive when it's wide open.
Oh, he definitely will drive.
Yes.
He'll drive.
And that's the weird thing with Rondo. you know it's 80% he's passing it.
Yep.
But you just don't know where
when
it's
that
coming.
That 20 is going to sneak
that's
in.
That's true,
there.
And that's where he gets the easy layup. Yep. And Drew Holiday.
Oh, my God.
He's finally healthy, and that's why you're seeing, you know, why they gave him. I think he's a max player. And Mirotić was a good add because he doesn't need the ball at all, except you get it, he shoots it. So for everybody, he's just standing there waiting for it.
Waiting.
Yep.
And
you need a couple guys like that instead of dudes. You're right. Like with Boogie out there, both very multi-talented players, but you got to figure they're both then bringing two big guys to cover them just in terms of poundage on the – there's like 300 more pounds of human being on the floor there. Just from having them out there, which it clogs it up,
right.
Just literally in terms of the weight.
And they're ball-dominant bigs, right? So
yeah.
Boogie Cousins is a ball-dominant big. Even though he doesn't bring the ball up the court, he likes to have the ball in his hand. And so oftentimes they run the offense through him. So when you take that out and you take that away, now you have a true sense of it of a NBA offense where the point guard is the facilitator.
Right, right. And but everyone else can handle the ball if they have to. And then the defense. Boogie, if Boogie is 100% and playing 100%, it just seems that he is so emotionally kind of
volatile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that can take him out of any game. A little bit like Rasheed Wallace, I guess, in that way.
Goodness. Born for the technical foul.
Yes. Yes. Wow. All right. Let's do one more thing here because it didn't happen as much as I thought it would, but I wanted to ask about this. So right above us are our neighbors who usually are you just hear the little kids yelling, but they're moving out right now. So there's a lot of clomping and stomping and going on, everything like that. And I was wondering, you've moved a bunch.
Yeah.
But never within the season.
Right, no.
But you did move. So you were saying earlier you went Houston to Detroit for a year and then back to Houston. Did you keep your Houston place?
I had it. I kept it, but I was renting it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you ever buy a house in
Houston.
An NFL season? You bought a house in Houston.
Houston's the only place I ever bought a house.
Okay. So you would get what? Condos or apartments everywhere
Condos
else?
Condos or apartments.
And then when you... So you're drafted out of San Diego State.
Went to Atlanta.
Went to Atlanta, got a condo.
You
got
to remember, I was a seventh round draft
pick. Right, so you're renting there.
Didn't know. It could have been over at any moment.
Right. Where in the seventh round did you go?
Pick 199.
Like Brady.
Yeah.
You're the same pick as Tom Brady.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good pick.
It is a pretty good
pick. If 199 gets you Tom Brady and a 13-year left tackle,
you're right there. You've won the draft.
I bet you that pick is better than like 134. I have no idea.
Sure,
there might be some guy that. but like, I mean, a 13-year starter alone is a great thing for a seventh round pick. Tom Brady. Now Brady was a late six. You must have been an early seven.
I was a early seven.
Okay.
I didn't even know when in the seventh. I wasn't even watching anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I was completely turned off.
Were you mad?
Yes, I was on my way. My brother and I were on our way to the movies.
Right. Do you remember the movie?
No, I don't remember. Anything.
Yeah.
It could have been anything.
Yeah, right.
And then I got the call from Art Shell, and he was like, hey, Ephraim. I said, hello? He was like, yeah, this is Art Shell from the Atlanta Falcons. I was like, hey, coach, how you doing? He was like, I'm good. Just letting you know we're going to draft you with the 199th pick in the NFL draft, the seventh round. He said in the NFL draft. I said, well, what round is that? He was like, the seventh round? He was like, are you not watching? I was like, yeah, no, I gave up. I gave up a couple hours ago. He was like, hey, look, I'm going to tell you this. I was like, I'm giving you an opportunity to come in here and prove to these people and all the other teams why you deserve to be in this league. Is that a deal? And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's all I needed, just an opportunity
absolutely.
To compete.
That's what everybody wants, because once you get in there, then, you know, the proof's in the pudding.
And I was nervous. I didn't know if I could play in the NFL. Like, I wasn't the strongest guy. I was mainly just really athletic and quick and good feet and hands.
That's how you got drafted.
And my first practice, I remember, I was like, man, am I going to be dominated out here? Like, it's just so many. It's very.
Right.
It's not like playing receiver, right, where you just you run around and you catch the ball. All you got to do is just catch the ball.
Right. If you lose, you get the shit kicked out of you,
literally. Yeah, you could be physically dominated.
Yeah.
Right? Like, ran over, stepped on.
Concussed.
Concussed.
Over and over.
Over and over again. And so that was always, I was always like, man, because I'm looking, I'm watching the NFL and I'm seeing Reggie White and, you know, Bruce Smith and Charles Haley and Greg Lloyd.
Yeah.
All of these guys, all of who I had to play against, you know, Kevin Green.
Ooh.
And
that was when he was at Carolina?
Yeah, I played against all of them.
Yeah. Did you play against Peppers? You did, right?
Yeah, I played against Peppers. I played against, remember, Javon Curse, the Freak?
Yeah.
Him, Dwight Freeney, Jason Taylor.
Okay, so
I came in, was a premium on pass rush.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, that you came in around the time of the Michael Lewis book, I think, Blindside. Wasn't that, or was that a couple years after
that
you started?
After. That was after
you started.
Yeah, that was after.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were, the left tackle revolution was happening, you know, because Ogden was in the league at that point,
yes,
wasn't he?
Ogden, Tony Boselli.
Right.
Bob Whitfield.
Yeah. There's another big one I'm thinking of.
Orlando Pace.
Yes, Orlando Pace, the number one pick for the
My God, see, and this is what football does to you right now. Like, he's a friend of mine. I love him. Willie Rofe.
Sure. Oh, Willie Rofe.
Yes.
Huge dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
Eric Williams. Like, all of these guys.
Oh, Eric Williams. Yes.
And then me.
Yeah.
Well. Right? So we were. So people always ask, well, how come you didn't make any Pro Bowls? Because they.
That's it. The tackle revolution had begun. And guys who they would have put somewhere else on the field. Maybe defensive end or whatever.
Yeah, because I was a defensive player.
Right.
When I got to college, I played outside linebacker and defensive end.
Right. But again, when you get to the NFL, everything thin. So that's kind of where you realize, shit, I've always been the biggest, baddest. Not here. So who was the toughest? We'll get off the apartment thing because this is much more interesting. And we could talk about this a lot more, but who was your toughest guy?
Dwight Freeney.
And he's a Hall of Famer. Quickness, not as big as some of the guys.
So when Dwight came, he was a safety at Syracuse.
He was?
Yeah. So when Dwight came into the league.
He was a safety?
Yeah, man.
That's more than Urlacher transitioning.
Man, he was so fast. But when he came into the league, fast was fine with me.
Right.
Like, I never had a problem with fast. Javon Curse was fast. Yeah. Jason Taylor was fast.
Sure.
Like, I was okay with fast. And I played against Dwight more than anybody I've played against in my entire career.
Uh-huh.
Like, for whatever reason, I ended up in his division for a good portion of my career. But
right.
Even when I wasn't, I remember
your team would
in Denver,
always end up matching
we played
up.
Him, and we played him three times in 1 year when I was in Denver. Like, we played him in the preseason, played him in the regular season, and then again in the playoffs. And I was like, how is this even happening?
Yes. And that was near the end of both of your careers.
No, this was right in the middle. This was, like, right in the thick. So
he
when
was
I was
Denver?
In Denver. No,
oh, you were in Denver.
I'm sorry.
Indian. Yes, got it.
And so,
my bad.
I remember going up against him, and all he would do is try to get the corner.
Yeah.
He would try to get the corner, and I would just play basketball with him. I would widen him all,
push him all the way
around, or he would try to come inside. I'll take him all the way inside. He would try to do the spin. I was ready for the spin, good hands, good feet. And I believe I was playing for Jacksonville at this point. So we had played against each other for years.
Right.
And we go to Indianapolis, which was a tough place to play. And it's third and like eight. So I take my set. I usually was light and up because of the
quickness.
Pass,
and it's a passing
it's
down.
It's a passing down.
So you're not hand on the ground. You're up.
I'm always up.
Okay.
And I didn't want – you can't be too heavy on him because he'll spin off you. It's very fast.
Right.
So you couldn't commit – so at all, you always played
light
on
your feet. Yeah.
And I'll never forget. Said hike. We drop back. I'm setting up high. As I come out of my stance, my hips elongate, my knees straighten. And I remember him running up the field and planting his foot and knifing right into my chest.
Oh, so he bull rush? Is that a bull rush
bull
there?
Bull rush.
Which he's not known for.
Never done it before.
Oh, he set you up for 5 years.
When I tell you, the back of my head hit the quarterback's legs.
Really?
I said it completely threw me off.
Sure.
Fucked my whole game up.
Well, you probably faced him at that time. You've probably gone against him a couple hundred times.
It was,
right?
Easily.
And now he pulls out after 200 times. He comes at you.
I struggled the rest of that game. Like, I was just barely hanging on by a thread.
Just because you didn't, because it was something you didn't expect.
And we're good friends.
Right.
So after the game, I went over to him. I said, "What the fuck was that?" And he said, "Man, out of everybody I ever played against, you've always been my toughest competition." And so my coach and I sat down and we watched every game we ever played against you. And he said, "The one thing that I had never done was power."
Yeah.
And he said, "If I can go from speed to power, then I couldn't be blocked in this league." And once he got that down,
right, that was it.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, changed. Ask Jonathan Ogden.
Yeah.
What he did to him on Monday Night Football, I already knew. So I was like, this is bad.
So there was a switch in his technique.
Absolutely.
And that took him. That took him to the Hall of Fame.
That took him from good to the one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah.
Period. Ever.
And that's 4 or 5 years into his career where he's realizing that.
Oh, Lord. He already was running about a 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So can you imagine? So what he would do is he'd make you bite on the speed.
Yeah.
So now your technique is off because you couldn't sit heavy and you couldn't be slow.
Right.
So the only way you can be fast, remember, we're backing up. It's already unfair.
Right.
He's in a sprinter stance. I'm backing up.
Yes. He's got
that doesn't seem fair.
No.
And so you would try to get out to cut him off. And right when you got out of position, he would spin underneath,
right,
and he would run me right over.
And that's why those techniques are because you have to be in such a perfect stance to both have the mobility to push him outside or whatever, and the balance to stand up to the and he had set you up so that you took the balance for granted.
Yes.
And then he just knocked through you.
Yeah.
Mm.
He embarrassed
Smart.
Me.
You guys both have a lot of money, so you should be happy about that. It worked out fine for everyone. We could talk more, but we don't want to tire out our audience, so we'll save some of the good stuff about apartment moving and just all kinds of other stuff we were going to talk about. We didn't even get to the scholarship thing and how that works, so we got more to talk about.
More urine-based facts?
We'll have some of that all the time. You can count on that to be pretty consistent. I even looked at, again, we'll talk about what we talked about with Molly. That's a whole segment we can do again.
We got
plenty. Probably see more of those people.
We got plenty. Tune in. You don't want to miss the sports dump.
You don't. And I'll tell you, I know you went to San Diego State and everything, but I was looking at this, and this is a teaser for when we talk about scholarships. If you're a walk-on at Nebraska, you still get a pretty sweet deal. That's just – I just looking that up. Mm-hmm. It's probably not as good as a scholarship deal, but damn, I could have been a walk-on.
But you're in Nebraska.
Buddy. Oh, all right, good. We'll talk about that later. All right, this was a sports dump. Thanks for listening.